Hello, young lovers, whoever you are, I hope your troubles are few. All my good wishes go with you tonight. I've been in love like you. You be brave, young lovers, and follow your star. Brave and
welcome back on Michael Radio, listening to thought-provoking talk on Dresser After Dark.
I've been in love like you. And I know how it feels to have wings on your heels and to fly down the street in a trance. You fly down that street on the chance that you'll meet and you...
Jason Selk with us. He's the author of Executive Toughness, The Mental Training, The Program to Increase Your Leadership Performance. He's the director of mental training at the St. Louis Cardinals, author of The 10-Minute Toughness, and the newly released book, again, Executive Toughness, The Mental Training Program to Increase Your Leadership Performances. He's a regular contributor to ABC, CBS, ESPN, and NBC Radio, and TV, and has been featured on in Muscle and Fitness, Shape, and Fitness Magazine. Uses his in-depth knowledge and experience of working with the world's finest athletes, coaches, and business leaders to help individuals and organizations out for competition. And let us say, Jason, hi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. Good to talk with you again.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. You know, when we talk about mental toughness, when people work out, they spend their lives trying to stay in physical condition. But what they don't get, the missing ingredients is, Jason, if you don't have the mental toughness behind it, you're not going to be able to perform physically. Where is that missing link where most kids, most adults, and most businesses aren't taught that?
Well, you know, it's a great question, and the truth of the matter is we've done a terrific job on the physical side of things. You know, we've really used the science to develop the best plans out there to get your body ready for whatever sport it is.
Sure.
If you're just trying to put yourself in a position to be optimally or ideally healthy, we have trainers that can help us with that. But when it comes to the mental side of things, like you said, it really is somewhat of the mortar that holds the whole thing together. There just aren't as many people that know what to do to actually develop the mental toughness. We all know we want it. We all know we need it, but very few of us know exactly what to do on a daily basis to make it happen. And I think that's where I've had some of the success I've had with the people I work with is I think my contribution to the field of sports psychology and performance psychology is I've really tried to help people understand on a daily basis this is exactly what you need to do to put yourself in a position where you'll be training your brain to be mentally tough so that when you need that mental toughness, it'll be there for you instead of just hoping for it that it shows up when you need it the most.
Jason, I'll give you a great example. There was somebody I worked with a while back, and the guy was a heavy weightlifter. You know, he was deadlifting 400 or 500 pounds and all the good stuff. And when we got into it mentally, every once in a while when it would go beyond his ability to cope and reason at that spot, he had to quit and he had to go out in the forest and he had to run, okay? So physically, you didn't mess with this guy. But emotionally and intellectually, that mental toughness wasn't there. And within seconds, you could basically destroy him.
You know, and it's not just him, and we can all attest to there have been times when the pressure got to us, and
sure,
we gave in, and we quit. You know, and it's really difficult. You know, I don't want to minimize how difficult it is, but I think the message I want to send to people is it's doable. If you really want to be mentally tough, which everyone does, then you have to put some time and energy into it. And, you know, I think the first book that I wrote, 10-Minute Toughness, it literally, for an athlete, that book was written purely for athletes. For an athlete or for a coach, it takes 10 minutes a day maximum, and that's if you're going to cover all three of the phases. And if you do that, you'll put yourself in a position where you will, in fact, be following a scientifically proven plan that you will develop your mental toughness. For business, it's actually easier. You don't even need the 10 minutes. It really boils down to business to be about 7 minutes. Now, the title of the business book is not 7-Minute Toughness, but in the end, it really does come down to there are some very specific tools that have been identified by some very great research that if you will complete the tool, if you will follow the plan, and a big piece, I have to say, is on a daily basis. It really does require not necessarily 7 days a week, but you've got to be putting energy into it, just like with your physical training. 3, 4, 5 days is great. If you put that energy into it daily, you cannot help yourself from developing that mental toughness.
Now, let me give you my definition of mental toughness, and I'm not a clinician, so stop me if I'm wrong here. And this is the way I think what I think of mental toughness in my own life. You walk up to me and you say, Michael Ray, you're a butthead. And my response is, yes, I am, and I'm good at it. And I go along my way, and I do my day, and it hasn't affected me. It hasn't destroyed me in such a way that I've got to prove I'm not. I'm mad at somebody. Now we're in a fight. It's called toughness doesn't necessarily mean you have to strike back at someone. It's just having the ability.
Very well said. In fact, your definition is an example of what my definition is. My definition is the mind's ability to focus on and execute solutions, especially in the face of adversity. I'm going to say it again. The mind's ability to focus on and execute solutions, especially in the face of adversity. You realize that when someone comes up to you and calls you a name, that you'll make more of a problem for yourself if you cause a scene, get yourself arrested, or get into a fist fight. So the solution for you is to not worry about it. Don't let your ego get in the way. Just let it roll right off your back and move on with your day to more important things. Whatever the solution is, that's the key to mental toughness. But it's so easy. It's so normal. There's this thing called PCT, problem-centric thought. This is how our brains are built, that it's easier for the human mind to focus on problems than it is to focus on solutions. And this is why those who are mentally tough have such an advantage over those who are not, because when you can train your mind to start focusing on solutions, you have such an advantage over what normal people will do. Remember, normal people will fall prey to PCT, and those who are most mentally tough will really focus on solutions. I'll give you an example of problem-centric thought. What would you say, Michael, is the number one resource known to mankind?
The number one resource? Define resource.
Yes, the most valuable asset or resource known to mankind.
I think your mind.
Okay, good. That's a very good one. I was talking more just hard assets, so let's say oxygen. Without it, we die the fastest. It literally is the lifeblood to the human organism. When is the last time either one of us have thought to ourselves, wow, this is great. I have an abundance of the most valuable resource known to mankind, and I don't even really have to work at it. All I have to do is inhale. Typically, we overlook the things that are good in our lives, and our mind focuses on those things that we don't have. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough respect. I don't have as good a relationship as I want. I don't drive the nicest car. I don't have the best looking spouse. You know, whatever it might be, it's so much easier for our brain to focus on the problem or what we don't have as opposed to all the good things we do have. Now, part of getting on top of that is you have to realize that's how your brain's built. So knowing that, just like realizing your body, the normal course for your physical strength is, if you don't put any energy into the training, you will be physically weak. We know that. We accept that. It's the same thing with the mind. If you don't put any training into, any work into developing mental toughness, PCT will be the norm. You will focus on problems, and in doing so, you will have more problems. Expectancy theory tells us that which you focus on expands. And so, unfortunately, the normal way our brain is built is we focus on problems, and the real issue with that is expectancy theory proves over and over again that by focusing on those things we don't have, we actually cause more problems for ourselves. To give you a business example, if I have a call with a client that doesn't go well, I don't make the sale. I hang up the phone and I focus on, wow, that did not go well. I just blew it. I just lost one of my big clients. I know I got to make 3 more phone calls. I make the next phone call and I'm still thinking about how I blew it in the first one. And as I'm thinking about it, I'm frustrated, I'm rushing, and it causes me to do a worse job in that second call. That's human nature. That's expectancy theory. That's PCT in action. And what we need to learn to do, what the mentally tough people learn to do is, even when there is adversity, because remember, you don't really need mental toughness when you're making those sales, when things are going really well. It's when there's adversity. When you make that call and it doesn't go well, mental toughness is when you can stop, reset, have the strength to get your mind focused on, okay, what's the solution for the next call? And it might be treated a different way. It might be instead of make three calls, now I need to make five because I just lost a client. But to get yourself to focus on solutions when things are going tough, that's the real mark of mental toughness.
Yeah, and by the way, sometimes it's that stuff that you shouldn't be dwelling on, the anger, the rest of it, that can turn around and be the best friend you've ever gotten. I remember a couple of years ago, I went into one of the local gyms. I'm working out. I'm sweating. I'm doing my stuff. And there's a woman, she's on one of the machines, and she had to be, let's say, mid to late 40s, and she's just doing those very gently going back and forth, and then she's going through the motions, but, you know, there's nothing coming out of it. And I walked over to her, and I smiled at her, and I said, "You got somebody you're mad at?" And she said, "Yeah." I said, "Put him in front of you and take it out on him." And I'll tell you what, that woman had the best workout she ever had. But by the time she was done.
And that's the thing is, and it's such a great thing you just said right there, is let your mind decide instead of let something else decide for your mind. So what I mean by that is you can easily let anger take over and let your mind shut down. Now, the difference with what you did with this young lady was you got her to decide, to think about it. What is a solution? And for her, she thought to herself, okay, a solution is right now to take some of this anger out by really getting after this, and it's going to put me in a position to have a better workout. So I think that's good. Just be careful with that, because what we don't want to do is we don't want to let our emotions decide how we think or behave. Remember, it's always start with the thoughts in between your ears. That's the control panel for how we feel and how we behave. And so such a big piece is learning that thought control, identifying what those solutions are, and then executing. Even if the solution is get mad and tear it up in the weight room, that certainly can be a solution, sound like it was for her, but let your brain decide. Because if you let your emotions think for you, a lot of times it can get us into trouble.
Yeah, but see, she took control. That's the key. And I remember once I was at home, and it was years ago, and I'm in my office, and the fax machine's not working, and I'm really getting upset with the fax machine. And I picked up the fax machine, and I walked out into the front yard, and it's kind of in a foresty area. There was nobody there. And I put that fax machine up over my shoulder, and I said, "Do I want to throw it? Yes. Do I want to throw it? No. Do I want to throw it? Yes. Do I want to throw it? No." I finally threw it, but I made the decision, Jason, to throw it. I was in control.
Okay, I love that. And let me say this. This is a tool that, it's one of the tools that I teach in the mental workout. It's a piece of the program. It will put you in a position to let your mind work and make good decisions. Because remember, know this, that when your heart rate elevates, when you get emotional, your heart rate elevates, and it causes your brain to shut down. It actually goes back to fight or flight. Your brain disables itself so that you can protect the organism. You know, the only two things you can really think about are run or fight. And what we want to be able to do is have the ability for detailed thought, not just the ability for fight or flight. Detailed thought, you can still decide to fight or flight, but you can also think about other things as well. So here's the thing. Anytime you catch yourself really losing it emotionally, do this thing called a centering breath. And a centering breath is pretty simple. All you have to do is breathe in for 6 full seconds, hold that air there for 2 seconds, and then breathe out for 7. And when you do that, so again, breathe in for 6, hold for 2, breathe out for 7, it works really well when a person's nervous as well. But anytime you catch yourself starting to lose yourself emotionally, take that deep centering breath. What it will do is it will control your heart rate, and it will send the message to your brain that it's okay to have detailed thought. Your brain will start functioning again. You'll be able to think. And again, it doesn't mean that you can't get yourself to fight or flight. It just means that you get to decide, just like you did right there. I like how you said it. Control is such an important piece.
No, absolutely. Two things. We got about 3 or 4 minutes to go, and I want to make sure that we cover this one area that you cover. But the other side of that, when you deal with fight and flight, that's unconscious. That is sympathetic, parasympathetic nervous system. You're not even consciously thinking about that. But as long as you're consciously aware of making your decisions, you control all of those things. Now, I want to touch on sports and business. Now, I'm old school. When I was a kid, when you played football, you got out there and you did everything you could possibly do, or when you ran track, everybody was not a winner. You came in first, second, or third, or you lost. What you had to do was get better the next time if you wanted to come in and be one of the first, second, thirds. I think the biggest problem that we have today in business, they don't have the sports training. They don't have that team camaraderie and the focus on a particular goal. Schools are not teaching sports the way they used to teach sports. And I think, Jason, that it's moving into the business world.
Michael, I'm with you. You know, I think we treat our society with such kid gloves that we really have created somewhat of a soft population and mentality. And I agree. I think we're really seeing some ill effects of that. I'm a big believer, too, that losing is really okay. Like, when a person loses, it really can be a gift. As long as you learn that losing doesn't make you a failure permanently, what it does is it puts you in a position that you were temporarily a failure, but back to what you were just talking about, control. You can control that failure by working harder. It's an indication that you need to work harder. And that's one of the things in our society. We struggle with hard work. I mean, I hate to say, but how many people out there these days actually put a good, honest 8 to 9 hour day work in? And truthfully, those people who are those who are having success. You know, it's just something I agree. I'm not sure societally how to make the change, but I know the people I work with and the messages I send are, hey, listen, don't be afraid of failure. Learn to use failure so that we can toughen up.
You know, one definition of failure, when it really comes down to it, if you're playing football and there, or you're running track or you're in any kind of a sport, if you're in the sport, you're good enough to be in the sport. And it was playing the game, being involved in it, in and of itself is a win, because there are so many people who can't do what you do. So this stuff about failure, all it is saying, okay, let's look at it a different way. Let's move this way. Let's strengthen up here and let's take control over everything and move from there. And if you never win at sports, guess what you can do? You can win at life, because you've gone back and you've done it over and over and over again and enjoyed yourself doing it.
Undoubtedly, you know, and I'm a big John Wooden disciple, and Wooden talks so much about process, that really whether you win or lose is not what's most important. It's how much effort you put into your preparation. And if you, on a daily basis, and he wouldn't give you a soft definition of effort. He's not going to let you, you know, go out there and give a kind of a half effort and then say, well, I tried my hardest. I mean, he's going to really define for you what your best effort is and preparation is. And if you can go out there and then hold yourself accountable to that, and that's one of the things I really push in the second book, is identify what at work you really need to do to be successful. Don't overdo it. Come up with those top two or three things. And then, if on a daily basis you complete those, what I call the process goals or the priorities, if you complete those on a daily basis, you don't have to worry about results. You can unlock that results monster and not worry about it, because there'll be days you have results and there'll be days you don't. But in the end, if you've come up with those correct process goals, you can be certain. Again, back to that word you used, you will be in control of your destiny and your success.
Absolutely. Dr. Jason Selk, do you have a website we can find you at in the books?
Thank you so much, Michael. The website is jasonselk.com. Again, the first book, which is selling really well, I think it's a book more for the athletes and coaches, more written for the sports-minded person. 10-Minute Toughness, you can find it at any bookstore. Obviously, you can get it online at the online retailers as well. And the second book comes out November 25th. This one is Mental Toughness for Business. It's Executive Toughness. That one, again, you can get on any of the online retailers and in the bookstores. They are doing pre-orders right now, so I would encourage everyone interested in developing that mental toughness, give either of the books or both a look.
I will leave you with my favorite quote by John Wayne. He said, life's tough, but if you're stupid, it's worse.
That's really good, Michael. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay, good night.
So many fabulous faraway places to see. Why should Spain and Tahiti and Rio just be only names to you and me? I feel certain there's people we'd be glad to know there. So tell me, why don't we get up and just go there? Go to those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris, and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London, wonderful, fabulous places we're longing to see. There are so many simply incredible places to see. When I think of the warm Caribbean, I see a new world for you and me. I'd give anything just to have one single day there. And once we get there, I know that we'll stay there. Stay in those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris, and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London, Siam, Siena, Vienna, Verona, Java, Jamaica, Bombay, Barcelona. Show me those fabulous places we're longing to see.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought-Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark. Randy Garn with us, the co-author of Prosper, Create the Life That You Really Want. He's the founding partner. He's one of the founding partners of Prosper, Inc., currently oversees the new business development department and works closely with some of the world's most renowned educators, speakers, and thought leaders. He's a passionate networker and an entrepreneur. He loves growing companies and helping companies succeed. He's a serial entrepreneur, and in a connection with Prosper, Inc., he's founded several other companies, which are industry. Oh, wait, it's the White House. They're trying to stop us. I won't let them do it. It's the economy. We got him, Randy. Hey, Randy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Michael, it's great to be on here. Appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. Well, we were going to talk about Prosper and economy. I thought they'd get us. We weren't wearing the tinfoil to stop the rays.
Yeah, it could be there. They're calling us to figure out what we need to do to get this thing going again.
Oh, you know, the lost economy, and then so many people say that. Randy, do you really believe that the economy's lost, or we just kind of covered it over for a while?
You know, I don't think it's lost. I do think that we need a total mental shift in what people think is happening right now. There was just a recent survey done that over 50% of Americans think that their children are not going to have a better future than they had. And so I'm not one to agree with that, but I think there are some fundamental things that we can do, and I think some fundamental shifts that we can do to help. You know, get people's perspective back to where it needs to be. We still live in the greatest country. There's sure. still abundant opportunities and possibilities. There's probably going to be there is more entrepreneurship happening than ever. So, I do think it's a bit covered up, but I do think there's the best is yet to come.
Oh, absolutely, and so do I. Because when you really come down to it, the history, whether it's economy, the society, whatever the case may be, it's cyclical. It has its ups, it has its downs. We're in a downtrend right now. But the one thing that I am very aware of, that there still is a tremendous amount of money here, and they're just businesses, major businesses, that aren't putting it out yet because they're not quite sure where this economy is going to lead us. But we are not, when I say we are not broke, the government may be broke, but the populace in itself, in and of itself, is not broke. If we have a 9-10% unemployment number, which is high, they don't talk about the 89-90% of people who are employed.
Exactly. And I think that even in today, and we just finished a book too as well that kind of addresses, you know, what prosperity means, and it's kind of redefining. And you're exactly right. Everything kind of goes in a cycle, and right now we're kind of in we're reinventing ourselves, and we still have, you know, all the freedoms to be able to do things. But I think right now, what people need to do is figure out what they're the best in the world at. And I think even large companies, big companies, Meg Whitman always says that she needed to reinvent Google every 6 months. She'd have huge strategy meetings every 6 months to just figure out where it's going. And you look at what they've done. I mean, eBay, you look at what eBay's been able to do, but she had to reinvent that all the time. And I think if people realize that, that we are in a reinvention process right now, and there's a lot of opportunity. So,
Randy, let me give you a prime example of that. When you guys the definition of prosperity, it's the same thing that if you have a definition of money. When you're 11 or 12 years old, you have a definition of money. When you're 20-ish, right, you have a definition of money. At 35, at 45, and all the way up, depending upon where you are in your life and what responsibilities you have. And I think what's going on now, if you're 35 or 40 or 45 years old, you cannot be using the definition you had of money that when you were 15 or 20. So you're right. It's a constant redefining to keep up with what's going to go on in the world.
Yeah, and it is. I love Jason Selk's interview just earlier, too, because he talked about a process, and we have a prosperity process that you need to go through. But it has changed, and, you know, you think about what it means to be prosperous, and we did some extensive research. We've been training entrepreneurs for the last 12 years on you know, how to get their business going and how to decrease the failure rate of businesses throughout the world. And right now, the definition of prosperity is a lot of people think that, you know, it's either having enough money they don't have to worry about it again, or it's, you know, just having abundant happiness but not being able to pay your bills. We really redefine prosperity is that it's a balance. It's really multidimensional. It's a balance between money, happiness, and then the key is sustainability. And that, for us, is where you can become very prosperous.
Prime example, take one of the one of our little starlets who, you know, are making hundreds of millions of dollars, and any given 10 or 12 of them, they're making hundreds of millions of dollars, and they're in and out of rehab all the time. They're committing suicide.
Right.
They're not happy. They've got that something that is out of balance.
Yep. Well, and you take a look at it. I know an entertainment attorney in L.A., and you know, he probably makes close to $1 million a year, but he's overextended. He's got a humongous house. He's got, you know, all his cars and working his guts out. And he's like, Randy, all I want to do is be able to spend time with my family. And even though he's making a great income, he's overdone it. And on the flip side, I know another gentleman that owns a janitorial business that works maybe 20 hours a week, has his crew out doing the things that he wants, that he needs to have done, and he's able to spend time with his family. He's got everything paid off, and he both has the money that he needs, the time that he wants to do, and his business is growing without him being there every day. And
okay, well,
so
let me
think, even in today's economy, people need to look at, man, what matters most to me, and what amount of money do I need to be able to maintain that lifestyle that I want to lead. Instead of people getting stuck in a treadmill of just chasing after the money.
Okay, Randy, I want to take you back to the guy who owns the janitorial business. Okay.
Okay.
Is he a client of yours?
Yeah, he is.
Okay, good. All right, no, great. All right, let's talk about him. Not his name, but let's talk about him. Here was a guy who was in business. He was a guy who was in business, and it could have been like anybody else in any of the other businesses that are going through all the stuff that they're going through. Yet he's not going through what a lot of the businesses are going through. You held them by the hand. You took them through certain steps. What steps did you take them through?
Well, we take them through. You take them through a process of, you know, what, and especially being an entrepreneur or a business owner, or even being an entrepreneur working inside a business. We help them understand, okay, what are the things in your life that matter most to you? And it could be, You know, they want to start a nonprofit, or they want to spend the time they want to have with their family. If you take the time to what we call a Polaris point, if you take the time in your life to figure out what is it that I both have skills to do and that I love doing, it's where your passions and your profits can mix. If you go to work every day and you hate what you're doing, that is not being in a prosperous state. And anybody can get a job that they hate. But this janitor actually really enjoys his clients. He loves getting out. He loves his employees. He loves the time he gets to spend with his family and do certain things with his kids. That the other gentleman is, and he even said, I would do anything to trade places with him. Even though the attorney is well-renowned and he's got awards and all that, he has conflict. So.
Okay, but are you bringing up, quote unquote, the invisible to the table, the guy that owns the janitorial business, the blind spots? And when I say blind spot, things that they didn't see. They're running their life, they've got their business, they've got their family, they're doing all the things they're doing. At the same time, when they made those mind shifts, those changes that you walked them through, everything was the same, yet the entire thing was different.
Yeah. You know, and that actually, and I'm glad you brought that up. It is trying to find those blind spots, and seeing those little things that make a big difference, and being able to help him see. You know, it used to be just his one practice, or he was the one doing everything. But we helped him understand how to put a business model together, so that he didn't have to be there overseeing everything at all times. You know, let's get a good financial expert to help you set up your accounting appropriately. Let's hire on a couple of more people so that you can move from having to be the one that has to be there from, the technician, and get you to the point where you can actually be the entrepreneur and start having a vision and growing it. And so helping people see those blind spots is something that's so exciting and something I love to do and to help people see.
Sure, and I think a great example of a blind spot also is you take a business, just pick a number, they're making $100,000 a month, that's costing them $70,000 to make the $100,000, they end up with $30,000 in their pocket. Now, they've got competition all over the place, they are fighting to be out there in the marketplace, they're fighting to keep the money that they have. You walk in, you take a look at the business, maybe, you get into the accounting department, you come up with some kind of a software program that saves them $30,000 a month. Now, they got $30,000 in their pocket that they didn't have to go out and spend money for somebody to make. Increase the bottom line. What was it? It was something that they didn't see that was there all the time.
Yeah, and you know what I see most in a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of businesses that we're working with is that exactly that, seeing those blind spots. But a lot of entrepreneurs look at their competition. They look at their failures and say, you know what, and they don't get the confidence, or they don't make the commitments that they need to make. And one thing that in our last chapter in our book, as well as Take Profound Action, is one of the things that most 65% of people want to know all of the answers, before they start. But when you're an entrepreneur in today's economy, you are never going to know how things are going to end. And so most people, 97% of all businesses fail, not because it wouldn't be successful, it's because they get scared, it's because they don't put forth that plan. But most people running a business today, and I think always, but even more so today because there's so much shift in technology and so much competition out there, is that you just have to realize that running a business or starting a business is like driving a car at night. You know you're going to end up getting to home or that game or that cousin's house, but you end up getting there because you can always see 10 feet in front of you. And I think today in business is I just want people to understand that you're not going to know all the answers, but just be prepared to be stalwart and take the action that you need to every single day.
Sure, and also, you know, Einstein said it. I'm sure you're familiar with the quote. We can't solve problems by using the same old kind of thinking we used when we created them. A very fast-paced society and change. And when you come down to it and they scream about the economy, what was this new, it wasn't an iPad, but what was this new thing that just came out 3 or 4 days ago, like an iPad, iPhone something? Randy, they're $800 a piece, and they sold a million of them in the first day. So tell me there's no money.
Yep. The iPhone 4S, I think, and then, and another one. Yeah, it's just amazing. So
Yeah, absolutely. And it's even getting worse. So we need guys like yourself to symbolically hold us by the hand and move us through.
Yep.
Because you're in business, because you're an entrepreneur, because you've got a great idea, because you're innovative, doesn't mean that you're going to make it, because there's the blind spots, the things that we don't see.
Yeah, exactly. And we've got business professionals all over too as well that will help you. And a lot of people have a great idea and a great product, but they don't know how to get it out to market. And so, and which is phenomenal today with the internet and all of the social media that you can do some pretty inexpensive test marketing to make sure that your product resonates out there. And so we also help a ton in the branding and the marketing, because a lot of people will have a fantastic product, but they don't know how to get that message out.
You know what one of the best tests are before you launch? The best test in marketing.
What's that?
Talk radio. You go out, you make your mistakes. I'm serious. You go out, you know, as the guest. If you got a product, you go out and you make your mistakes. You find out what works. You find out what doesn't work before you put money into advertising and everything else. That's really one of the best ways to test any kind of a product, a service, a cause, or something.
Yeah, that is true. And I think the other thing, too, as well, is all the branding and marketing through radio and direct mail still is alive. And so if you've got a great product, it's being able to get that message out there and be compelling. But at the same time, one of the things that we really find is key, again, is going back to loving what you do and being passionate about your product. We found that the reason, you know, prosperity to us is money plus happiness plus sustainability. If you have something or you're doing something that's earning a living, that means that's making a profit, but you don't love doing it, you're not going to be able to do it over a long period of time. And so and that's also a big reason why people fail, is because they get worn out, they get exhausted, and they're not doing what they love. But when we start really doing what we love and we enjoy, it's like Steve Wozniak. A lot of people may not know who Steve is because he was one of the founders, you know, of Apple Computer. And he said, yeah, my goal wasn't to make a ton of money; it was to build a good computer. And so, and you look at what they've been able to do, and the way they've been able to change history. So,
oh, no question.
It's not always chasing after the money, but it will come if you're really, really good at it, and you can do it over a long period of time.
No question, Randy. We're starting to run out of time. I hate to do this to you because I could probably talk to you all night. But website where we can find you in the book.
You know, we the best way to find us is we just hit the New York Times this week, and we hit number 3 on the New York Times, and so the best way to find the book is you could go to Amazon, just type in Prosper. But if you go to prosperbook.com, you can go on there and find out more about the book that we just launched out there, and then also you can go to our website prospering.com, and that's prosper with an ing.com.
Hey, by the way, thank you, and thank you so much for spending the time with us tonight. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Michael, love the show, and I love what you're doing to bring forth some great content. It's wonderful.
Great. Thanks a lot, and good night.
All right. Have a good one.
I can only give you love that lasts forever, and the promise to be near each time you call. And the only heart I own for you and you alone. Oh, that's all. Oh, that's all. I can only give you country walks in springtime, and a hand to hold when leaves begin to fall. And a love whose burning light will warm the winter night. Oh, that's all. Oh, that's all. There are those, I am sure, who have told you they would give you the world for a toy. All I have are these arms to enfold you, and a love time can never destroy. If you're wondering what I'm asking in return, dear, you'll be glad to know that my demands are small. Say it's me that you adore, for now and evermore. Oh, that's all. Oh, that's all. There are those, I am sure, who have told you they
Welcome back on Michael Ray. You're listening to thought-provoking talk on Dresser After Dark. Reza Khalili is with us. He's the author of A Time to Betray, the astonishing double life of the CIA agent inside the Revolutionary Guards of Iran. He's been warning us about the threats of the Iranian regime and its terrorist activity for years now. And most recently, he revealed that the Iranian Quds forces and Hezbollah, the cells, have infiltrated the heart of Europe, and in collaboration with drug cartels in Mexico, they have entered the U.S. He spied for the CIA and the Revolutionary Guard of Iran in the 80s and 90s, currently teaches at the Joint Counterintelligence Training Academy of the Department of Defense. And Reza, hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's a great pleasure to be on your show.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. You know, the concern that I have, you've been there. You have done that. You lived within the regime. And yet, for some reason, the government, let's just call the government, forget what an administration is, they're not listening. What is it that they don't want to hear about the reality of the strength that Iran actually has?
Well, from the early days, I mean, I was a young person. I was like about 27 when I approached the U.S. authorities. I risked and traveled out of Iran to let them know about the atrocities and the dangers of this regime. And then meeting with the CIA officials, I mean, the FBI agents set up a meeting with the CIA officer, and then one thing led to the other, and I became a spy. But from day one, and the purpose of my activity was that to raise awareness and let the West understand and realize that these people are serious, that their ideology is what they need to understand, and that they're a danger not only to the Iranian people but to the world. And ever since, I've been puzzled of why the West refuses to accept this reality, and it's becoming more dangerous every day.
Now, when we go back to the things that some of the occurrences that have happened with Iran and the things that we are not looking at, quote unquote, a lot has to do with what goes on within the culture and the society here today. The political correctness, the we don't want to offend anybody, and the sensitivity, and so on and so forth. My goodness, Reza, that, if we're not careful, that's going to kill us.
Yes, and it's what you said is very true. But remember, back day in the late 70s, President Carter came out and said Khomeini is a man of God, and that Shah is a dictator. I mean, as I've shown in my book, during the Shah's era, Iran was progressing. It was a modernized country. Majority were educated. I mean, hundreds of thousands were being educated outside of Iran, with hundreds of thousands getting education in Iran. And basically, it was U.S.-friendly. We had Jews, Christians, Muslims, all living happily as a big family. And then all of a sudden, you know, the events that took place was shocking. And then Khomeini was called the man of God. And then what took place after that, hostage taking, terrorist activities, Marine barracks bombing, Khobar bombing, Panam bombing, and my God, the creation of Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, the support for Hamas, and everything that has taken place to this day. And we still refuse to accept that the center of terrorism and instability is in Tehran by these radicals who have taken the Iranians hostage for over 30 years.
Sure. Now, Reza, what do you think? Where do you think the major challenge is? And when I say the major challenge is, usually if there is a problem, let's say the drug cartels, you follow the money, you find out where the problem is. The pharmaceutical industries throughout the world, you follow the money, you find out where the problem is. Is this the same thing we are dealing with? Is somebody, and I don't mean to be a conspiracy theorist, I'm not, I'm a pragmatist, but is somebody getting paid to turn around and look the other way while we're seeing this damage going on?
Well, actually, that was the case for many years, because after the revolution and the breaking relations with U.S., all of a sudden the Europeans, the Soviet Union then, Russia now, and the Chinese all jumped in, thirsty for all these lucrative contracts. And I've disclosed in my book, A Time to Betray, France, Germany, and England gave the green light to the Iranian intelligence ministry to assassinate the opposition figures in their respective countries, and hundreds were assassinated. This was a shameful act, but it was for oil dollar, for all the contracts they were getting. Germany and England were selling NATO equipment to the Revolutionary Guards while the U.S. arms embargo was in place. But I think what's happening now is that the fear of further instability with the current uprisings in the region and the fear of greater war has had us accept this evil, which is quite similar to what was taking place in the 1930s. And very soon we're going to find out that they have a nuclear bomb. And then, as I've said many, many times, there will be war, but it will not be on our terms. And that's why millions of lives are on the line, and we have to change our ways right now.
One of the things that I was concerned about, I watched very closely with this Gaddafi thing this morning. He was killed. So Gaddafi dies. Now, in the United States, we have basically Republicans, Democrats, Independents, three or four major parties. And this is where the battle is back and forth. But if you go to, you know, Gaddafi country, quote unquote, you've got 140 different factions that are going to be fighting for control there. And if you watch what's going on, which is a concern, They're talking about democracy, but that may last for about 2 days until somebody gets in there and starts to control again. There is a mindset. There's a consciousness within that region and those regions that bring them right back to the way that they were.
Well, yes, Libya is going to be a difficult place. I believe that U.S. and European Union countries need to jump in immediately, make sure that there is a consolidation of power with one entity, that it moves towards a democratic movement. Otherwise, as you said, many tribes, many divisions, and everybody is thirsty for the oil dollars and others. And it could become a mayhem, a chaotic situation. And we cannot accept that. We cannot allow such chaotic situation in that region and another foothold for Al-Qaeda. But Iran is totally different. And I think there is a misunderstanding by majority of Americans, or at least by some of the Americans, about Iran. You know, the Iranians are one of the most westernized people in the region. And basically, a change in Iran would change the geopolitics of the region and somewhat in the world, and they would be one of our best allies, and they are ready for a fully democratic government.
No, but when we take a look at it, and I can see what's going on in the world today, I've been around a few years, and the United States in and of itself is the most powerful, physically powerful force in the world. There is no question, hands down. You can't take us standing up toe to toe, but you can take us by causing us to implode. You can take us by division, by separations of, you know, ethnicity, of religions, and so on and so forth. And if you get enough of a separation and a spread, you dilute the power that we have. And I think that's one of the things that is going on in the world today. Reza, I believe that they're not afraid of the United States anymore. And there should be some of that fear to at least be able to have some kind of control where they're not doing what they're doing today. And it's been a major problem, and it's not getting any better.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. Today, America's leadership has been diminished. Its authority has been diminished. The respect. Many in the world looked up to America as that source of light for freedom, for democracy, for what's right. that has been lost. And just look at the radicals who rule Iran. They've been mocking us for over 30 years. They've been killing our soldiers in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Beirut, and we haven't done anything about it. They've been, every day they're calling for death to America, death to Israel, and every action they take is for our demise. And their strategy to engage us in Iraq and Afghanistan, which is one of the reasons we are where we are today, and we are almost bankrupt because of that, we didn't have any response to it. So you're absolutely right. We need leadership. We need that courage. We need someone in America to stand up and lead this nation and lead the world. That's what's missing right now.
And they had it at one time, and we were that way until, I would say, about somewhere in the middle of Vietnam, and that's pretty much where it stopped. And Vietnam, I'm just going to take it back for a moment. It's a Tet Offensive. It was over. It was done. They were finished. But the problem was is when we had the demonstrations, we had the anti-war protests here, that gave them impetus. That gave them strength, and it caused a lot of deaths that didn't have to happen because the war was extended. I really believe what's going on now also when we see the kind of demonstrations and the peace marches and the rest of it that are going on here. Sometimes, Reza, I have to sit back and say, do they really know what they're demonstrating about? Do they really understand the intrinsic the motivation that causes them to do what they do? Because in the end result, it looks like it's more harm than good.
Well, yes. You know, a lot of these demonstrations obviously is out of frustration for the current economic situation. But, I mean, the Iranian commanders, Revolutionary Guard commanders, Iranian supreme leader, Iranian fraudulent president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and others daily are emphasizing on the fact that America is falling apart, and they are providing advice to the U.S. protesters that continue on, don't let White House fool you, and that your freedom relies in Islam. And I mean, look at where we are now. We've got the jihadis trying to interfere with our own internal matters. That's how low we've become. That's how weak we've been. We are seen in their eyes. And again, as I said, there is no leadership. There's got to be leadership. We are at a very critical juncture in human history. And I got to be very blunt about this. Hundreds of millions of people could lose their lives. That's the kind of confrontation that is upon us.
No, absolutely. There's no question about it. And I think we have a concern, or we should have a concern, when we get somebody like Ahmadinejad and he comes to the UN, he comes to American soil, and he tells the world how bad we are. Some of the people get up and walk out, but the majority stayed in the UN and they applauded him. Something wrong with that picture.
Oh, absolutely. And then look at the media. Everybody is approaching him for an interview and spreading his propaganda. This guy shouldn't even be approached. There shouldn't be any platform for this guy to spread his nonsense in America. And you know, today we have a clear choice before us. We have to understand the threat. We have to understand the ideology. We have to realize that if the Iranian regime obtains the nuclear bomb, which they could very well within months, they have enough uranium for 6 nuclear bombs, then it will be an existential threat to U.S., to Israel, to the stability of the world, regardless of our power, mighty power, that we can turn them into glass. Mutually assured destruction will not work with them. That's what I've been trying to make our leaders understand. Just as the plot they were planning here, there will be other plots. And as I revealed recently, they'll have their vessels armed with long-range surface-to-surface ballistic missiles, which will expand mission into Atlantic Ocean, right in the Gulf of Mexico. It will take 90 seconds to launch one nuclear warhead, blast it over U.S. skies, and create an electromagnetic pulse attack where two-thirds of U.S. population, America's population, could cease to exist just 1 year after such attack. That's what kind of a threat we are dealing with.
So we're just about running out of time. But by the way, they were going through that in Alaska for many years, talking about that magnetic attack. We have to go now, but let me ask you this. Do you have a website where we can find you at, where we can buy the book?
Oh, absolutely. My website is atimetobetray.com, just the title of my book. All my articles, updates is on there, and my book is on there.
Wonderful. Hey, Reza, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and stay safe.
Thank you so much, and God bless.
Thank you. Good night.
I can only give you love that lasts forever, and the promise to be near each time you call. And the only heart I own for you and you alone. Well, that's all. Well, that's all. I can only give you country walks in springtime, and a hand to hold when leaves begin to fall, and a love whose burning light will warm the winter night. That's all. That's all. There are those, I am sure, who have told you they would give you the world for a toy. All I have are these arms to enfold you, and a love time can never destroy. If you're wondering what I'm asking in return, dear, you'll be glad to know that my demands are small. Say it's me that you adore, for now and evermore. Oh, that's all. Oh, that's all. Say it's me that you adore. Yeah, it's me that you adore. For now and evermore. That's all.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You are listening to Thought Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark. Lori Hussinger with us, and she's the author of Toggle It, A Guide to Reboot Your Emotional System. And she is a natural therapeutic specialist, a licensed massage therapist. She owns and operates Alpha Omega Therapeutics in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She's a graduate of the New Mexico School of Natural Therapeutics. Her 12 years of experience in the alternative health field led her to her discovery and the development of the Toggle technique. Lori now conducts consultations, combined treatment programs, utilizing massage therapy and the Toggle technique. And she maintains her practice, publicly lectures, teaches, and continues to conduct research on the many mental and physical health advantages that result from toggling. Hey, Lori, welcome to the show.
Very good. Thank you.
You know what the question is going to be, don't you? What
usually,
is toggling?
Yes.
What is toggling?
What is toggling? Well, toggling is really a mental focus technique based on an understanding that the emotions that we feel are part of a system, and that the system works in a polarity. There are a few different kinds of remedies and treatments available in alternative medicine that utilize this polarity aspect of the emotional system. And my quest was, is there a way that we can access and shift that polarity, transforming negative emotions back into positive emotions using just our mind? And so the toggle technique is literally the technique that developed from that research.
Okay, now, let's make it practical. I come in to see you. I've got an emotional problem. I've got a physical problem. I come in to see you. What do we do?
Okay, well, basically, we will chart out and see if you have any pain or what the actual physical problem is. The application of toggling has been used with Chinese medicine so that we can determine what's going on with you physically. Will tell us exactly which stress emotional range needs to be addressed. So, for instance, if you're having stomach problems, then we know that worry is a very specific emotional complaint that will directly affect the function of the stomach. So then we would have you talk about, we would discuss that with you and then have you do the mental focus technique specifically on worry issues. And that would start to alleviate the physical complaint.
Oh, okay. Now, do I have to come in or will the book tell me, I got the book in my hand, by the way, will the book tell me exactly what to do to help fix it?
Yes, the book will tell you exactly what to do. It's the book is a brief history of myself so that it talks about the kind of stress that I came through and how this technique was actually found. And then the last half of the book is really the developing of the technique. We found that people were a little bit hesitant, not understanding what toggling is. It's very simple, but it's a hard concept to wrap your mind around. So the book gives the explanation in really great detail. And then there's also on the website at toggleit.com, there is a free audio download, which literally will talk you through it. It's my instructions that I use in the office, and it talks you through the actual technique. So you don't have to be in front of a practitioner to do this work. It's work you can do on your own, although at times with strong emotions, it's usually easier for people to use it if they have a practitioner there to, I don't know, kind of make you feel grounded.
Sure. Okay, now, can it be done from a distance? Can we, can we do it on the phone? If I was going to hire you in as the consultant to do this or the therapist to do this, could I do it on my webcam?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I do phone consultations, and as well as some of the other therapists that I've trained, and you can also come in and have an office visit. So it can happen either way, sure.
Okay, so basically,
that I'm there.
I'm going to come in, and if there's pain, let's say, for instance, there's pain in my shoulders. What is that going to tell you?
Okay, it depends on exactly where in the shoulder. The back of the shoulders generally is affected by the anxiety, lack of confidence, and despair range of emotions. If it's on the very top of the shoulder, then we would look at the anger range of emotions. If it's toward the front of the shoulder, then we look at grief and sorrow type of emotions.
Okay. I would be a mess for you to come in. I hurt from top to bottom, and that's almost 24 hours a day. And there's a reason for that. Let me put it this way. I've collected Social Security for a number of years, but I wouldn't start a day without working out. I don't know what to do with it.
Well, certainly. Well, one of the things that's interesting about this technique and its understanding of how emotional stress is related to pain, Michael, is that if you try to if you have some stress going on and when you try to talk yourself out of the stress is when the stress will literally start creating a pressure grid inside the body. So that'll be when people start to have the physical complaints. If the emotional stress is much more active in the mind, maybe somebody has made you very angry. Excuse me, I've had a little bit of congestion today. But if the emotional stress is more in the mind where you're actively angry or afraid, then you tend to have less complaint in the body. The complaint won't show up until you're trying to talk yourself out of it.
Let me just make sure we've got this. So if you deny it, if you try to resist it, you bury it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And this is something that we just don't understand up to this point about the emotional system. Oftentimes we're trying to overlay positive ideas on top of the negative emotions to sort of put them to rest. And this literally is the cycle that will start a physical complaint.
Okay, so in essence, the more that you're in denial, the more that you're going to end up hurting, because what you're doing is you're internalizing those external problems that you don't want to face anymore.
Yes, exactly. And generally, you don't want to face them because you don't really know what to do with them. But the bad feelings don't really give you the opportunity to find good resolution. Now, the interesting thing about the toggle technique is that in the actual technique, let's just say that we've identified that anger is going to be an issue that will relieve some of your pain. We would have you think about the thing that you're angry about. We call it a reverse thinking technique because you're really doing the opposite of what we've been conditioned to do. So in this case, we want to go into worst case scenario. What we're doing is we're giving the system permission for the anger to come up. Once you're feeling the anger, then the focus is to just have you focus on the anger itself. Now you're actually engaging the system of the emotional response. As you focus on it, mentally what you're doing is you're going to draw the emotion right into the center of your awareness. It's like, it feels, Michael, like you're drinking a milkshake through a straw. And when you do that, it literally takes and reboots the emotion back to a positive experience, to a positive frequency, which allows the mind to relax. It becomes better at problem solving, and simultaneously, the pain or the complaint in the body begins to find resolution very quickly.
I learned a long time ago of a great definition for anger. Lori, the definition of anger is blocked expression. Because if you think about it, that's when you can't get it out and somebody's either not going to understand it or they won't hear it in the way that you meant it. Because you've never been mad, you, me, any of us, we've never been mad at anybody who agreed with us. So it's that disagreement. when you deal with what anger is. And then again, it's the back to internalizing it. And so what I'm really hearing you say is you found a way to release that internalized, I'll call it energy for the moment, that internalized energy in a constructive way that people can go through life and they can fix the problem and live decently.
Well, you're absolutely right. And if you can address the emotional charge around any problem, you will find yourself kind of sailing through those issues without nearly so much conflict. And it's true of fear, it's true of anxiety, the despair, the grief, the anger, the worry. Yet each one of those emotional ranges will affect different parts of the body when they're suppressed. And they will activate different types of cognitive function once they're transformed.
Okay, so in essence, what you're really dealing with is the I won't use the word denial, but what you're suppressing is building up. I did probably the third time I've said this, and do it in a different way. But it's suppressing what it is that you're not willing to let go, and it's causing some real internal havoc within your system. It's affecting the immune system. It's affecting the electrochemical balance of your body. It's throwing your immune system off, and it's also affecting your brain, which will have an effect on your cognitive awareness and all of those things that you just talked about, because our body is just nothing but a big electrochemical factory anyway. So if we're internalizing and we're blocking and we're getting disconnects, we've got problems.
Absolutely. And the other really great thing that we were able to do when we realized the power of this technique I call a toggle is that we introduced the application of Chinese pulse reading. And in Chinese medicine, there are three pulses on each wrist, three positions, where you can literally, when you feel the heartbeat or the pulse in the wrist in each of the positions, it tells you the quality of balance to specific organ systems. And so I'll kind of talk you through one of the applications. If a person is having problem with their kidneys, then one of those pulse points specific to the kidneys will be weak. You won't feel the pulse very strong. And what that would tell me as a practitioner utilizing the stress approach to making these corrections is that the person is suppressing fear or unworthiness, doubt. It'll be in that range of emotions. And so I'll tell them, I want you to tell me, you know, is there something you're afraid of that you're trying really hard not to think about? And then 90% of the time the people will, with a little contemplation, know exactly where to go with the question. And then I tell them, just think about that problem until you start to feel the fear. And I'll be feeling their pulses while they're doing this. And once the fear comes up into the mind, the pulse will get very nice and strong. in Chinese medicine, that is an indicator that that organ system is beginning to balance itself. So what you're seeing is this little bit of like a seesaw. It's like if the emotion comes up in the mind, the body gets freed up. If the emotion is pushed down out of the mind, then the body gets bound up. Now, of course, the next question is if we don't want to walk around afraid all the time or angry. So that's where the toggle comes in as the technique. As the individual focuses directly on the fear and then follows my lead and they pull it in, I can feel changes happening in the pulse. And once the pulse really clarifies, I can tell that the person has come onto the other side, which means now their mind is very relaxed. The second part of this, or the next part, is that when they go back and think about the problem again, the fear no longer comes up. They've literally reprogrammed the stress reaction, and instead their mind will be very relaxed. And so it's a mind, body, and emotion, which you could sort of say spirit. It's the mind, body, spirit all lining up into a more balanced state.
So really the goal, the end result, the main goal is to get back to balance and connect where it's disconnected.
Yes, the emotional system is very powerful. When it's put into its positive position, it renders us empowered. When it's been, you know, programmed into negative emotions, that's what disempowers and trips us up. And so what we're doing is we're systematically looking at the emotional system and picking and choosing which emotions we want to work with, and we're reprogramming them back to a positive frequency where they're very usable. It's almost like you could see it as recycling the emotional system.
Ah, hitting the reset button and going from there. Laurie, we're starting to run out of time. Website okay. We can find you at?
It's at toggleit.com, toggleit.com.
Okay, and we can buy
there or on Amazon.
Okay, we can buy the book there, and we can get private consultations there too, right?
Yes, and the free download.
Wonderful. Hey, Laurie, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate being on your show.
Take care. Good night.
Okay. Good night. Thank you.
And as the moment ends, I got a funny feeling we're parting out as friends.
I'm Michael Ray Dresser, and that, my friends, is
It's a wrap.
We'll linger after they've torn down these dusty walls. If I had this to do again, and the evening.